AFSK's Midday Magazine for Tuesday, October 25th. I'm Angela Denning. Fire destroyed a mobile home on South 5th Street in Petersburg Saturday night, but no one was injured in the blaze. The police department received the call around midnight on Saturday, October 22nd. The Petersburg Volunteer Fire Department responded with two engines and an ambulance crew, about 10 volunteers in all. Dave Berg is spokesman for the Volunteer Fire Department.
Upon arrival, we found the trailer fully engulfed in flames, and also flames impinging on a neighboring residence, and had also threatened that structure, and it set the outside of it on fire. The crews quickly deployed two speed lines to try to keep the fire contained, and also to keep the heat down on the adjacent structures so that the fire wouldn't transfer to other buildings that were close by.
Berg says the mobile home was completely burned, but firefighters extinguished the flames on the neighboring building. No one was inside the trailer and no injuries were reported. Berg says he doesn't know if the mobile home was attended at the time the fire started, but he says volunteers received some help.
We certainly appreciate the local residents who were able to help us get some hose and quickly get connected to the hydrant system. Our numbers were rather low with the hunting season the way it is, and some members out fishing, so it's always nice to have extra people on hand to help when we have something like this that really stretches our manpower quite thin.
The cause of the blaze is still under investigation and may be from several electrical appliances or a wood stove used to heat the residence. Research continues at LeConte Glacier near Petersburg for clues as to how fast melting ice could affect sea levels all over the world. One father-son pair from Oregon teamed up this month to get a closer look at the process.
Fly all over the place like a little helicopter. And that's our boat.
I'm sitting in front of a laptop computer looking at recent footage of an icy blue LeConte Glacier taken by a flying drone. Oceanographer Jonathan Nash is pointing out areas of the glacier near the water.
This is classic sort of little calving events where little parts of things fall off.
There was one that was more impressive when we came up to the face.
That younger guy is Nash's son, Elliot, who is 12. He owns the drone.
Is it? Oh, this one's split. Yeah. It's split.
Yeah, here it goes.
Ready?
And you watch this thing. Watch this. And the whole thing just goes.
And then the video stops, of course.
While it was Elliot's first trip to the glacier, his dad and other researchers had been there several times before. LeConte is the southernmost tidewater glacier in the northern hemisphere. It's easily accessible for scientists who want to understand what accelerates the rate of glacial loss and what keeps it stable. What they do know already is that glaciers suck in warm water from the deep ocean into bays and fjords. What happens is the glacier drains cold, fresh water through subglacial channels, kind of like rivers underneath the glacier. And that cold water rises against the glacier surface and pulls the deeper warm water along with it.
And so the more rapidly that warm water enters the bay and reaches the glacier face, the more it will erode the glacier.
Nash is trying to figure out just how quickly that process, known as feedback, happens by using LeConte as an example. What's the speed of the subglacial river? What's the temperature of the ocean water? The answers could lead to knowing how rapidly the glacier is retreating.
The question is how these feedbacks work, and the strength of that feedback is very poorly known, and especially in any of these climate models and models that are predicting sea level rise and projections of climate over the next 10, 50, 100 years, don't have the dynamics of these processes properly sort of incorporated in the models. They have big fudge factors that they use. Oh, this happens, maybe that happens. And what we want to do is study the processes that are happening there.
So ideally, there could be some kind of calculation where if you figured out more details about the rivers and the incoming warm water, then you can make more predictions globally about the different glaciers.
Exactly.
Melting glacier ice matters because it would raise sea levels all over the world. Higher water would mean populated coastal areas are more susceptible to floods and storms. Nash says it won't happen overnight, but it will happen.
The amount it's risen now is relatively small. You know, it's centimeters, so, you know, less than a foot. But if all of the ice on Greenland melts, sea level will rise by about 5 meters, so roughly 15 to 20 feet. You know, the predictions are sort of in the 100-year time frame that sea level could rise as much as a meter, and that would have huge implications.
Nash is part of a team of scientists from multiple universities and disciplines funded from the National Science Foundation to study LeConte. To help gather glacier data, Nash normally uses drone-operated unmanned kayaks. There was too much surface ice on this trip, so he took measurements from a boat and had his son's flying drone for a bird's-eye view of the glacier. Elliot was happy to oblige.
Because I can get way closer to it than in a boat. In a boat, you can't really get that close to it. As you can see, there's the calving, which makes giant waves.
Elliot has grown up in a generation where global warming and rising sea levels are in the news. It was a known fact when he was born. His dad, on the other hand, who is a professor of oceanography at Oregon State University, remembers a time when it wasn't so clear.
I was super skeptical at the onset, too. When people would ask me, you know, oh, is the climate change real? You know, is sea level rising? I would say, well, we don't really know. And then now, you know, in the last decade, there has been just a tremendous amount of effort from the scientific community to try to pin these things down. And it is absolutely, all the evidence is conclusive, and it points to, you know, one thing, and that is that carbon dioxide levels have increased due to humans.
And in turn, temperatures have risen globally. It's not a question of if glaciers will melt and sea levels will rise, but how soon. While Nash is using the Southeast Glacier to help figure out the details, perhaps his son's tech-savvy generation will soon be able to help too. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning. The U.S. Coast Guard airlifted 3 men off a mountain near Haines on Saturday following a successful goat hunt. Brett Bond, a 29-year-old hunting guide from Anchorage, was facilitating the hunt. According to a dispatch from the state troopers, Bond, 58-year-old Chris Kilbane of Minnesota, and 33-year-old Rito Widmer of Switzerland were all on their way down Porcupine Peak when Bond slipped and broke his leg. Porcupine Peak is around 30 miles outside of Haines, near the Canadian border. Troopers received a report of an injured hunter around 4:10 p.m. They determined that Bond was going into shock and that the hunters were not prepared to spend the night. They requested assistance from the U.S. Coast Guard. Air Station Sitka responded, airlifting the hunters off the mountain just after 10 p.m. Kilbane and Widmer were transported to the Haines Airport, where they were evaluated and released. Bond was taken to Bartlett Regional Hospital in Juneau for further treatment, where he was seen in the emergency room and then released. According to Alaska State Troopers, the hunters planned to retrieve the goat that was left on the mountain. The Craig High School volleyball team grabbed the inside track on the top seed for Southeast 2A volleyball this weekend, beating Petersburg in 5 games Friday morning. The region's small schools were playing in Klawock in the first of 2 tournaments that will determine seeding at the regional tournament this fall. Petersburg played Wrangell Wednesday night just off the ferry and won in 4 games after dropping the second game to the Wolves. The Vikings beat both Klawock and Haines in 3 games Thursday, setting up a match with Craig Friday morning. In that match, the Panthers won the first 2 games, 25-23 and 26-24. The Vikings came back to take the next 2, 25-16 and 25-11. But coach Jamie Cabral says his team got off to a slow start in the 5th and final game.
We started off with 4 unforced errors right off the bat in game 5, and that is tough to come back in a game to 15. So we ended up losing 15-10, but as we were, you know, watching the video, talking with the girls, we knew it was all our mistakes. So they are ready to work this week. So they are primed and ready to finish the season strong.
Cabral highlighted contributions from his players.
Kaidal got an injury while we were there in our first set against Craig, and so Emma Chase stepped up and ran the offense and did a tremendous job, and Courtney Fredrickson on the outside was just hitting fabulous the whole weekend, and so teams had a tough time stopping her. Our middles did a great job of blocking with Tanya Spears and Elisa Larson. Our defensive specialist really kept us in some long rallies with Chandler Strickland and Hannah Newman. And then Caitlin Willis came off the bench and played on our right side and performed phenomenally in those games against Craigdon, competitive throughout the weekend. And then we had some games against some other teams, and we had girls on our bench come up and play, and we had Leanne LaPerry put on a great performance setting. Julia Evans set the ball for us, too, in a couple games. And then Ricky Lewis played some back row for us as well. So pretty much everyone chipped in on all of the wins this week, so that was good.
With that win, Craig holds the top seed in the region, and Petersburg is number two. But the Vikings still have a chance to change that. A second seeding tournament is in Skagway in early November. Meanwhile, Petersburg hosts teams from four other schools this weekend. Sitka and Ketchikan will bring younger teams along with Craig and Klawock. Matches start Friday at 4 p.m. and all day Saturday with games in the high school and community gyms. Championship matches will be Saturday night in the high school gym. This is the next to last chance to watch the volleyball team play at home. The Vikings also have a home match in mid-November against Wrangell. A legislative aide used his connections to try to affect a state law in a way that would benefit his son, who state prosecutors say sexually abused a 12-year-old girl when he was 18. News reporter Kyle Hopkins and Austin Baird of KTUU reported on the lobbying. Baird spoke with APRN and KTO's Andrew Kitchenman about what they found. Baird says it took months of interviews to get people to talk about it on record. Here's the story.
This is involving a longtime legislative staffer, Tim Grusendorf, who's worked with the legislature since 1990. Currently, he's an employee of Senator Lyman Hoffman and the Senate Finance Committee. And exactly what he was working on is an effort to amend sex crime laws. His son, Ty Grusendorf, is accused of sexual abuse of a minor, and he was working on amendments that could have potentially directly benefited his son's case.
How did lawmakers react to Tim Grusendorf approaching them?
There were very mixed reactions. A couple lawmakers who now say that they did not get a full scope of the details of this case. Some were working with him on a version of an amendment that could have potentially had a very direct impact on that case, and that would be Representative Kathy Munoz from Juneau, a Republican, and a Democrat from Sitka, Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins. How far along those talks got, no easy way to tell, but there was an amendment to look into this issue further, and that did end up in Senate Bill 91, the sweeping crime reform bill that we heard a lot about all year long. And all that does is ask the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission to look more closely at the sentencing standards for sex crimes.
How did Ty Grusendorf's lawyer describe what happened?
So Ty Grusendorf was 18 years old in 2013 when he had a series of sexual encounters with a girl that was 12 years old at the time. Charges were filed in 2015. Ty Grusendorf's lawyer, Julie Willoughby, in a court filing described the sex encounters as, quote, mutually satisfying sexual adventures, and argued that this girl, who was in the sixth grade at the time, had solicited Ty's attention.
So what were the grand jury charges?
The grand jury charged several counts of sexual abuse of a minor, and those are felonies that carry potentially decades in prison and do have a hard mandatory minimum sentence attached to them if Ty Grusendorf is convicted. And those grand jury charges actually were tossed out by Judge Pallenberg, who's in Juneau and was considering that case. But John Skidmore, the criminal division director of the Department of Law, he does say that the department is still actively pursuing this case, and it's not an incident where it's perhaps double jeopardy because it never reached the point of a trial or anything like that. So the Department of Law is able to continue pursuing charges in this case.
What do advocates for rape victims say about this?
One victim advocate that I would point to, Senator Anna McKinnon, is an Eagle River Republican and a former director of the nonprofit Standing Together Against Rape. She said that she was aware of Grusendorf's campaign to change the law. And her quote on this was, "I don't want to disparage somebody trying to advocate for their son, which is fine, but it has to be in the seat." She's referring there to the place where people testify before legislative committees on public record. She says, "Step up, do it in the hot seat, not behind closed doors."
Did you look at whether Tim Grusendorf crossed ethical lines? And if so, what did you find?
Certainly, Tim Grusendorf says that he did not cross any ethical lines. And as far as whether or not he did, I'm not an attorney, and it's very tough to say. The organization that would look into that is the Alaska Select Committee on Legislative Ethics. And the problem with us trying to figure out if a complaint has been filed or anything like that, those are all kept private, so we really can't say, and they couldn't tell us if there has been a complaint all the way up until they find wrongdoing. So there's probably still a while before we would know even if there was a complaint filed and this was an ethical violation under legislative rules and also Alaska statutes. So we don't know yet for sure, and really we won't know unless there does end up being a formal ruling from the Ethics Committee.
And again, that was Austin Baird of KTUU. He was talking to Andrew Kitchenman, who is with APRN and KTOO in Juneau. That was about his story on a sex child abuse case and a legislative aides lobbying efforts that could help the defendant. And local residents will recognize that family name. Tim Grusendorf is the son of Ben Grusendorf, who represented Petersburg and other Southeast communities for many years in the legislature. We will be hearing from Jonathan Christ Tompkins tomorrow in KFSK News. This wraps up KFSK's Midday Magazine. I'm Angela Denning. Thanks for listening.